Hey, this is former NFL offensive lineman Ross Tucker with SiriusXM NFL Radio, and of course a bunch of different podcasts like the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and the Fantasy Feast Podcast for you folks. And you are listening to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Podcast.
Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowell.
Welcome back, everyone. We are the NFL Talking Heads of Fantasy Football Podcast Show, and we have a special guest today on the episode. We have Ross Tucker from basically everywhere, Ross Tucker Podcast, Fantasy Feast, SiriusXM NFL Radio, and much more. We talk some NFL draft with him. I am your host, Jeff Carrier. Along my side is Seth Lull. Seth, it is almost, I guess, Christmas time of year for NFL fans, right? The NFL draft is next week, and we get to see all of the promising players that our NFL team drafts.
Yep. It's basically the beginning of the fantasy season, as I like to say, because after the NFL draft, the moves start happening fast and furious. Time goes by fast. We are entering summer. The weather is getting warmer. We're gonna start doing some mock drafts, you know, do player rankings, ADP, all that good stuff. And it really sucks for you because you're gonna be missing the draft, aren't you? You're gonna be at a concert, right?
Yes. Once again, I'm at a concert, and I know you like to tease me about that.
Yep. Because I've never been a huge, you know, NFL draft person in terms of, you know, watching the whole thing on TV. But this year, I'm getting amped up for it. So I'm going to be watching the draft, and it's just funny how that works out because this year you are not.
Yep. I'm going to be at a concert. Could not have planned that any worse. We are New England Patriots fans, and New England, you know, either trades or gets their first round pick taken away from them basically every year. It's one or the other, so we never have a first round pick. This year they have two, and I get the enjoyment of trying to sneak look at my phone during a show, which I prohibit vehemently at any show I ever go to. I mean, if I hear someone talking next to me at a show, I tap them on the shoulder and just remind them that they're at a concert. I'm that guy.
I can see that. I can totally see that.
However, last time I did do that, the gentleman and the woman was very nice and apologized and then went ahead and bought me a beer. So that happened last week.
Yep, typical North Carolina.
But I'm looking forward to the draft. Everyone is going to be looking forward to seeing, obviously, who the promising young players that their team is going to be drafting. And as we know with the NFL draft, it's not just a one-day event. It's not just a two-a-day event. It's a three-day event. And it's very important for at least the first 2 days. There are some very, very viable prospects that are coming out and that could be game changers for you this upcoming year. And, you know, Alvin Kamara in the third round is a perfect example, and we see it year in and year out throughout the entire draft. So for that reason alone, it makes the NFL draft one of the more exciting, at least in terms of NFL draft, and it's going to be one of the most attended being in Dallas this year. And Seth, without further ado, let's kind of get into the episode here. We're going to be breaking down. We talk a little bit about the draft with Ross Tucker, which we'll get to soon. Talk a lot of bit about rookies coming out, offensive lines a little bit. And we're going to break down our top 10 overall fantasy landing spots that we hope that a team drafts a specific position. Sometimes you, especially when you're in dynasty leagues, you're researching, you're scouting all these players. And then your team, your player that gets drafted, you know, is already has a wide receiver depth of like three or four people. We talked about this, Seth, about Chris Godwin that we thought was, you know, pretty attractive player, but went to Tampa Bay completely, you know, buried in the depth chart. Not that he can't overcome it, but not the greatest of landing spots. So we're going to be talking about some easy landing spots that if the right player went to in the right position, went to this team, you know, we might get excited.
Yep, that sounds good. We got it. We got some. It was tough putting together that list, but I think we got 10 good ones.
All right. Before we do that, we are working, Seth, on a little. We want to actually announce that we are putting together a trade machine. That's right. It's going to be available on our website fairly soon. We're getting really excited about it. We're working on some of the details in the formula right now. But you're going to be able to go to the NFL Talking Heads .com website, and instead of sending, well, you can send us your trade request, but now you're going to be able to get in the heads of Jeff and Seth, put it in the trade machine, the fantasy trade machine, and have it spit back to you. Should you do this trade? Should you not do this trade? And when someone else sends you that terrible trade offer that you are just laughing, you just delete it as fast as you can, you're going to go ahead instead, put it in the fantasy trade machine, and just show them how despicable that trade offer is that they sent you with the report it sends you spitting out. Anyways, so we're excited to be working on that.
And so, some of the trades are so bad that you're not even laughing. You just get angry. Like me, I get like really angry when I get certain trade requests. That it just shows the complete lack of just, it's like, who do they think I am? You're going to send me this trade that's just like, do you think I'm an idiot? And people like that, you don't even want to send you a counter. They'll send you a text. Oh, how come you didn't counter? Well, listen, dude, I'm not going to counter your awful trade proposal because you started at such a ridiculous spot. There's nowhere to go. Like, we're done. So I think that this trade tool will help a lot of people that, especially those that don't know how to offer good trades.
Yeah. And even when you know how to offer good trades, I think that, you know, Seth, I'd like to put us in that category, doesn't mean that you can always come up with a good offer to start off with. It's just hard sometimes, especially when you're going after these studs, right? It's like, all right, I know I need to give up a lot for Todd Gurley or Alvin Kamara, whoever it may be. But how do I start? How do I start formulating what the true value of this player is? And I think that we'll even obviously see ourselves utilizing this platform because we want to make sure it works. But it's a great starting point to at least start giving you the framework of what you need to establish a good trade. So we figured let's start off, Seth, by at least breaking down one trade that we received in the last couple of days on Twitter. This comes in from Joe Marshall at PPR_Jesus. PPR trade. I asked for dynasty trade, so let's assume this is a dynasty trade, Seth. Dez for Hyde. Your thoughts there. It's a PPR. Let's call it dynasty. This is the time of the year that you would do this trade. Dez for Carlos Hyde.
I think I'll go Carlos Hyde because he's a running back. And, you know, I mean, we don't know if Cleveland is going to get Saquon Barkley. If they do get Saquon Barkley, I think it's a toss-up. I mean, a lot of this depends on where does Dak end up and does Cleveland draft Saquon Barkley, right? So I think as it stands right now, I'd take Carlos Hyde because I don't know where Dez is going. He's had an off past, you know, 2 or 3 years. Seems to have lost a step, not the same guy. So if he goes to a good situation, you know, let's do this. Let's assume Dez goes to a solid situation, you know, not a Cleveland, not an Arizona, not a Buffalo, and also not a New England, Green Bay, you know, somewhere in the middle. I would take Dez in that situation over Carlos Hyde with Saquon Barkley also on that roster.
Let's say there's no Saquon Barkley.
Then it's clearly Carlos Hyde.
Okay, so no matter what, it's pretty much Carlos Hyde. You know, is it just me or... And I've never been a big advocate for Carlos Hyde, but is it just me, or is this really how far down Dez Bryant's stock has fallen?
Yeah, it's at an all-time low. It was very low even before he got cut. I mean, I have Dez Bryant in two dynasty leagues, and I wouldn't have been able to give him away if I tried. Of course, I didn't because I'm going to take pennies on the dollar. But Dez, nobody wants Dez. Everybody is writing off Dez. I think he has one really good year left in him. He's going to be more motivated than ever. So if he goes to a good situation, I think he can have a good season. But it's hard to take him over Carlos Hyde if there's no Saquon Barkley, because Carlos Hyde, when healthy, has been one of the more underrated fantasy running backs in the NFL. And he's going to be going to a place in Cleveland where, yeah, the offense has been really bad, but they have Tyrod Taylor. Maybe he gets a little bit better. And he should be in for a lot of those... a lot of targets, a lot of catches out of the backfield, a lot of touches if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, I think I would have to lean towards agreeing with you. although it doesn't sound pretty. Like, when you say, I would rather have Hyde instead of Dez, I mean, first of all, we're talking about a PPR, so Carlos Hyde is pretty viable in the passing game. They do have Duke Johnson, really tough to tell. Tyrod Taylor, to at least start off the year, has proven to, well, running quarterbacks has proven to help out the running game, and we all know how many people commented on Isaiah Crowell last year and all the additions on the offensive line that Cleveland has. So maybe that will actually come to fruition when they have a decent quarterback. And of course, they'll be drafting a rookie. So either the rookie can't play right away and they keep with Tyrod Taylor, or the rookie's good enough. Either way, it should be semi-win-win. I think I would agree, though, because Dez is not the same person that he used to be, it seems. And at least with the running back, as you mentioned, Seth, you know a little bit more of what you're getting. So there's a quick initial breakdown of one draft, Seth. And before we get to the Ross Tucker interview, let's go ahead and talk about managing your leagues, right? It's that time of the year. It's the off season. We're in dynasty leagues. I don't believe, was it Winston Churchill or Spider-Man who said, with great power comes great responsibility? Either way, true words were never spoken when it comes to being a fantasy football commissioner. There's the nightmare of coordinating the draft, playing peacemaker when league disagreements arise, and then there's always that one guy who forgets to set his keepers. However, Flea Flicker understands these challenges, and they've built a platform for commissioners by commissioners. They have features like email drafts that make coordination a breeze, and your league will appreciate the ability to trade year-round. No better way to keep your league more involved in year-round trading. Trust us on that one. You'll be able to trade draft picks. You add in lightning-fast scoring, an easy-to-use interface, powerful commissioner tools, special dynasty features, a new mobile app to make things even easier than before, and you're good to go. Way to spice things up this season, choose from 125 different scoring rules. This isn't your typical, boiler template commissioner league scoring, Seth. If you're a commissioner out there and you want to take your league to the next level, Flea Flicker has you covered. Best of all, it is 100% free. That's right, 100% free. So if your current fantasy site makes simple league updates harder than they need to be, it's time to try something new, something better. Simplify your life by going to fleaflicker.com/talkingheads and see why Flea Flicker is a site commissioners love. Your league will thank you. That's F-L-E-A, flicker.com/talkingheads and get it for free.
Yeah, I'm on here right now, Jeff, and I'm thinking that for a couple of the leagues that you and I are in together, the email draft feature would be a pretty good feature, because you always have those two or three people that can't make the draft, can never agree on a time, or you schedule a time and they can't make it. I think that we should this would be good for a couple of our leagues.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm always looking for ways to be progressive, add in new features that, the standard quote-unquote ESPN sites just don't allow you to do. And again, they're not asking you to pay. It's free. So you guys check it out at fleaflicker.com/talkingheads. And now let's get to the interview with Ross Tucker. And now we welcome to the show Ross Tucker. Ross, once again, welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Back for a second go-round. We really appreciate you taking the time again to join the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. I think it was right around this time or close to it a year ago. Love coming on with you guys.
Yeah, it's always a blast. We always like to really bring you on to talk more NFL, dive a little bit deeper in terms of what's going to actually happen on the football field. Sometimes, you know, this show is revolving around a lot of prediction and fantasy analysis, which I know you're familiar with. So if you guys want to find Ross Tucker, make sure you hit him up on Twitter, Ross Tucker NFL. He's also got a number of excellent podcasts that I have personally listened to myself, Ross Tucker Football Podcast. He has the Fantasy Feast Podcast. So if you're looking for a good alternative fantasy podcast to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Pod, make sure you check that out. He also has Even Money with Ross Tucker, an excellent kind of a betting, gambling analysis and help there for you. And of course, with the college draft at this time of year, College Draft with Ross Tucker. Make sure you find him there. Ross, since we have the draft coming up next week, of course, we brought you on to talk a little bit about that. But before we start diving into those questions, we were kind of really curious, and I think our audience would be interested in knowing, what do you do for the NFL draft?
Well, it's interesting. This year, you know, the last few years, I've hosted the draft show at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. But, you know, this year instead, I'll actually be at the draft in Dallas working for a company called DAZN Canada, D-A-Z-N. They have the over-the-top streaming rights to NFL games in Canada, including, like, if you want to watch the Red Zone channel in Canada, you need to subscribe to DAZN because they don't have DirecTV up there. DAZN has those rights. Or if you live in Quebec but you want to watch every Raiders game, you know, you need to have DAZN. So it's kind of cool. It's a really unique platform. It's obviously where a lot of this stuff is going, the OTT streaming rights. So I'm happy to kind of get on with a company like that. That's the new wave.
That sounds like it's going to be a blast being at the draft. How many drafts have you been to before?
I want to say this will be my third or fourth, probably. I know I was there pretty early after I retired for Sports Illustrated one time. I know I did a live first round show for a different radio company one time. I was there for Sirius XM one time. So I've been to New York three times. I've never been to a draft that wasn't in New York. So that'll be different for me this year.
Okay. Well, you know, would you suggest, and I'm going to let Seth kick off the actual draft questions, but last one in terms of the NFL draft and attendance, would you suggest, you know, the casual fan to go ahead and purchase a ticket and attend the NFL draft? Is it that worth it?
I think it's something, one of those things in life that you should do once, you know, to like actually be there and see it all unfold behind the scenes and see just the scene that it is. I think you should do it once. Other than that, I personally think it's better on TV because you get to see the highlights and you get to hear the analysis. So I think it's something that you do once to check it out and experience it. And then other than that, you know, it's probably you're probably better off just going ahead and watching on TV. But that's also, to be honest with you, how I feel about going to the games. You know, I think going to the games like once a year, I think is awesome to kind of, you know, smell it, feel it, you know, take your kids to a game.
Right.
But then the rest of the time, I think it's pretty cool to actually, you know, watch it on TV. You know, it's a better experience in my mind.
Yeah, Jeff, you got to add the NFL draft to the bucket list.
Got to add it to the bucket list.
Ross, let's get into the most important position in all sports, quarterbacks. Out of the four main quarterbacks in this year's draft, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, number one, who do you like the most? Probably a second part to this question is, which out of that group do you see being able to step in, play immediately, having a solid, you know, high floor, and which quarterback do you see as, you know, having the most long-term upside to be the next franchise guy, whether that means stepping in right away and performing, like we saw Deshaun Watson do last year, or maybe taking a year or two, like other quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers did, holding the clipboard?
So they all have concerns. They all have flaws. But to me, the guy that's the clear number one is Sam Darnold. Now, there's a couple of things I'll say about that. number one, he's also the only one of these four guys I've actually met. And I met him when he was a senior in high school when he was in the U.S. Army Bowl. And I was just really impressed by the way he conducted himself. You know, you're talking about a guy that committed to USC, even though they already had a commitment from the so-called number one player in the country back then in Ricky Town. So think about sort of the guts you have to say, oh, really? The number one kid's been committed to USC for over a year? Yeah, I'm going to go there anyway, and I'm going to beat him out, and he's going to transfer, and that's what happened. So I thought that was impressive, and I remember him telling me that it came down to Duke and USC, and he thought about Duke just because David Cutcliffe, you know, was the head coach there. He thought the opportunity to be trained by the guy that trains the Mannings was really worth exploring. And so he almost went all the way from California to Duke just for that. So I just thought he was really impressed. And if you look at his body of work, you know, he started 2 years, but his redshirt freshman year was fantastic. I mean, that Rose Bowl game against Penn State was amazing. And then this year, you know, they really struggled at receiver. They didn't have Smith-Schuster anymore. They really struggled at offensive line. And he still held them together. He still got them to a big-time bowl game. And they did what they did in the Pac-12. His reaction is awesome. He is a playmaker in terms of making second reaction plays. And then you look at the other guys. For me, Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield both represent some decision-making risk and some physical risk. You know, for Rosen, it's the concussions, and he's already had a shoulder surgery. For Mayfield, it's the size. And then in terms of the maturity, you know, both those guys have multiple instances of doing things and making decisions that you really just don't see top 12 NFL quarterbacks make. I mean, maybe Roethlisberger made some questionable decisions, but the other guys, you know, the Kirk Cousins and Drew Brees and Matt Ryan and Brady and Eli, they just don't make these decisions that these guys make, you know? So that would be tough for me. If I'm a GM, I have 4 and 6-year-old daughters right now. It would be tough for me, you know, to sleep at night putting those guys, you know, up on as the guy that's basically going to tell the future of my family, you know? Because if you take a quarterback top five, if he succeeds, you get a second contract and all is good. If he fails, you're getting fired and you're never going to be a GM again. So that would be a concern there for me. For Josh Allen, the accuracy plus the time it takes him to process things is too much for me. He probably has the most upside. I guess I don't know many examples recently of guys with his issues in college that end up actually reaching their physical potential. It's just, that's tough to overcome. You know, the accuracy part and the processing information are pretty tough to overcome.
Yeah, and like you said with Sam Darnold, in terms of the way he carries himself, I think that's the hardest thing to measure when these GMs are evaluating these quarterbacks. You know, there's this game film they can watch. There's the combine. There are their measurables, their physical tools. But how much stock should be placed in the intangibles, the leadership, the things that are sort of hard to quantify at times? Because we saw it with Deshaun Watson last year. I mean, he came into the league, and I thought he'd be my number one quarterback off the board because we saw what he did in the bowl games. He's a gamer. And it's the other quarterbacks in past years, like the Blaine Gabberts of the world, the Jimmy Clausens, that for whatever reason, they're thought of as the next guy, but they don't have that it factor, which is something me and Jeff always talk about. He gets annoyed with how much I bring it up, but it's important. And it seems like a lot of times GMs tend to overthink it. How much stock should be placed in that part of the equation? And, you know, why did GMs get it wrong so often?
Well, it's a really tough position to evaluate because you're evaluating as much as anything. You're evaluating, you know, what's beneath their chest and what's inside their head, you know, and they don't really have measurements for that yet, you know, and I don't know that they ever will, but it's pretty clear that the guys that have success are the guys that are able to process information very quickly. And a big part of that is guys that just love it, man. I mean, that they just absolutely love it. And they all say they love it, but that's not necessarily the case. You got to know who really has that burning passion inside it. And by the way, the two most important things for me are accuracy and that burning passion, which is why Baker Mayfield would be my number two guy. Because he has both those things. He hasn't really learned from some of the immature decisions that he's made. You know, he's kind of done it over and over again, which is what would concern me. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if he's able to overcome those things and put that stuff behind him. And I think he just has that chip on his shoulder. But I'd rather put my faith in Darnold than Mayfield.
Thanks, Ross. Great analysis there. One other quarterback that I wanted to follow up with, just because he's kind of a polarizing person, is definitely this kind of new wave that we're seeing coming into the NFL. And not only that, he seems to be climbing up a lot of at least mock draft boards. So I don't know if he is officially going to be going in the top 20 or not, but Lamar Jackson used to be, you know, a fringe first round player. Now it seems like he's going to be a lock, if not a potential top 15 pick. With his type of physical capabilities, you know, the question I have is, what system do you think makes a lot of sense for him that's going to be able to fully utilize him and allow him to flourish in the NFL? And kind of just drawing from an example that, you know, not every quarterback has to necessarily be a Tom Brady, have all the tools. We just saw Nick Foles win the Super Bowl, and with Doug Peterson clearly game planning the entire offense around the strengths of Nick Foles versus, you know, sticking into what his system was when he had Carson Wentz. So what do you think of Lamar Jackson, and do you think that there's a system out there that would work for him?
Well, first of all, the guy reminds me of Michael Vick. And it seems like he's Michael Vick without the baggage, although I guess I don't know if we knew that Michael Vick had the baggage back when he was the number one overall pick. But it is interesting that Michael Vick was the number one pick. And, you know, even Vick says that Lamar Jackson's like him, maybe just taller. And yet no one's talking about Lamar Jackson as the number one pick. I think it's very difficult for us to know how much football he knows. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Right, like I don't know how quickly he would process information. I do think more and more teams are incorporating more and more of the college concepts. You saw that, like you pointed out, with what Doug Peterson, those guys did for Nick Foles, which really put him in a position to succeed. And I think if you put Lamar Jackson in a position to succeed, I think he can excel. I think he can be awesome, especially if you can get him to understand and not take some of the hits that some of these other guys take. You know, Russell Wilson does a pretty good job of it. I always felt like Kaepernick did an unbelievable job of not taking that many hits, and I think he's got a similar body type and physical skill set to Kaepernick. But, you know, what we saw with guys like that, with RG3 and Kaepernick, is that his defense has kind of caught up to some of those college concepts then. Those guys really struggled, even though Kaepernick still had the physical ability that maybe RG3 did not. So I don't know. We'll see. I think, you know, unless you actually meet and talk to the guy, it's kind of hard to know, where he is compared to a guy like Deshaun Watson. You know, I don't know that, where he is mentally. And if he's able to pick things up the way Deshaun Watson did as a rookie, but man, he'd sure be a heck of a lot of fun to work with, wouldn't he?
Definitely.
Yeah, and we always talk about how important landing spots are, you know, especially for fantasy, but in real life too. One team that really intrigues me is the Denver Broncos picking at number 5. If if Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, one of these guys falls to Denver at five, how do you anticipate, if any, you know, what impact do you anticipate the signing of Case Keenum having on that decision? Do you see Case Keenum being the quarterback of the future for Denver, or could you see Denver pulling the trigger on one of these quarterbacks?
If the right guy falls to Denver, I think they pull the trigger. I'm not entirely convinced who they think the right guy is. You know, you hear some rumors that they like Mayfield. I don't know. I think, like, if a Darnold fell to them, I don't envision that. I think they would consider that. I don't think that they would do Josh Allen just based on their Paxton Lynch, you know, process so far and the experience they've had with him. But I can see Denver doing it. The way Case Keenum played last year, I kind of feel like he's worth giving a shot this year to see if he can play like a top 15 guy again, you know? I mean, they might be able to get Saquon Barkley at five, pair him with Case Keenum, and then you might really have a chance to do something this year and give Case Keenum every chance to succeed since you have him on a two-year deal.
I got two quick ones here for you, Ross, and I know you've been really appreciative of your time here. So the two ones I wanted to hit home here as we wrap up, the first one is around offensive lines, kind of possibly your bread and butter. We've seen some teams really build out an offensive line and really help out the ground game. Not all of us really pay, you know, super attention to what the makeup of an offensive line is and which teams might be one piece away from putting together a formidable or established offensive line the way that the Dallas Cowboys have, where almost anyone can run through it. And of course, when you have someone like Zeke, it looks even that much better. So the question is, what team might we pay attention to in the NFL draft that is one piece away from potentially having a really powerful ground game in 2018? And if you want to name an offensive lineman they might select too, even better.
Yeah, so this is a unique draft in that there are some interior offensive linemen especially that I think could really be difference makers. You know, I think obviously Quentin Nelson, we all know that. I mean, I love watching that guy's highlights. And that's like offensive line porn for me. it's unbelievable. But there are other guys that are really, really impressive people movers. You know, Will Hernandez out of UTEP is another guy that comes to mind. I really like Billy Price out of Ohio State, even though he had that injury. James Daniels out of Iowa is a pretty gifted guy as well. And so if you're a team, you know, drafting later in the first round or the top of the second round that has a need on the interior offensive line, I think that this is a pretty good year for you. And what we've seen is if you're able to just add a couple pieces and get the right kind of guys together, you know, obviously what Dallas has done is really impressive, but they've invested a lot of draft capital in drafting those first round studs. You know, there are other ways to go about it, like the Vikings, who they got Elflein and whatever it was, the second or third round. They plugged Nick Easton in there, you know, former undrafted guy out of Harvard. You know, they got Riley Reiff and Remmers, a couple of old linemen that, you know, there wasn't a huge market for those guys. They put them all together, and it worked. And I feel like offensive line, and I've always felt this way, more than any other position, it is so much more about the sum of the parts than the individuals. You know, and I think sometimes teams get caught up in getting certain individuals, but they don't get the right guys that are able to fit with each other, the right group of guys. You know, if you ask Dante Scarnecchia from the Patriots, think about it, they haven't taken a first or second round offensive lineman since Nate Solder in 2011. Think about that. Think about that. And think about how their offensive line is always pretty darn good.
Yeah, that's one of the, I was just going to say that's one of the examples I was thinking of, just because we're New England fans and they never seem to invest any type of actual real investment, high-end investment in terms of offensive linemen.
Well, and when they do, Solder in the first round, Logan Mankins in the first round, Matt Light in the second round, they usually know what they're doing. But they've also figured out a way to get guys a little bit later that really ends up panning out for them. Shaq Mason, nobody thought he'd be able to pass block. There was concerns there. They do a terrific job evaluating that position. And if you ask Garnecchia, he'll say he wants guys that are smart, tough, and athletic enough. And they like versatility. A guy like Joe Thuney, that helps, you know, that has the versatility. They like guys that show that they can play both guard and tackle at the college level. And so, I don't know. I mean, if you want to know a guy in the middle round that you should take on the O-line, wait and see who the Patriots take. That's the guy. That's the guy that you should take in the middle rounds.
Perfect, perfect. Okay, and so in terms of rookies coming into the pros in the NFL, you know, we know it's all a big transition. It's hard for these GMs to obviously have a 100% hit rate. The game is faster. There's a lot of things that make it really difficult to get into the pros and be successful. Being in the NFL, Ross, and seeing a lot of rookies come in, what type of things or systems that the teams, NFL teams, put in place or head coaches put in place to help these rookies be successful? And maybe what teams do it better than others from the teams that you've either been on or teams that you've spoken with?
I think the biggest part of that is doing the work ahead of time to identify what a guy's FBI really is. And that's football intelligence. And it has nothing to do with what college you go to or anything like that. Although, frankly, it can a little bit if you go to a place like Alabama where those guys are usually pretty sharp and pretty prepared, you know, mentally from a football intelligence standpoint. But that's a really big factor, is to try to understand, and that's what they work on. Well, you know, the scouting process, a lot of that is identifying how much football these guys know, how quickly they pick things up, and then also how important it is to them. You know, because if you get a combination of a guy that football comes naturally for him, and that's not everybody. I play with guys, I'm telling you guys, that these guys were physical marvels, and they loved football, and they put the time in. It just didn't click for them. And no matter how much they studied, you know, when that team ran a stunt, they just didn't see it. You know, or the blitz came, they just were late on it. It just was not natural for them, no matter how much time they put in. And that goes for every position. Quarterbacks, obviously noteworthy. But you got to identify, you know, how naturally football intelligent they are. And then are they willing to put in the work? A lot of that, in terms of the success guys have, is really, I think, on the front end more than the system you put them in. I will say, like, there are certain systems where, like, New England's pretty complicated. And what's fascinating to me is they've had success plugging old linemen in right away, but not receivers. You know, so evidently it's harder on the receivers than it is on the old linemen. But I thought it was pretty complicated when I got there. It was my fifth year.
Yeah, interesting. We hear that a lot from the beat reporters as well. So that doesn't surprise me that you say that. It's interesting. Well, Ross, we really appreciate the time. You gave us some great insight in terms of some of the NFL, what to expect coming into with the draft, some of these rookies, quarterbacks. Make sure everyone checks out Ross Tucker at Ross Tucker NFL on Twitter. He's got his podcast, Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Ross, why don't you let some of our listeners know what you might have coming up this next week leading up into the draft?
Yeah, we've had a good week so far. Just, you know, Andrew Brandt will be on tomorrow talking about the Kaepernick situation on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, as well as the way the Cowboys released Dez Bryant. A lot of stuff to talk about with Andrew, as well as Reuben Foster and red flags. Speaking of red flags, we talked about that, as well as broke down the DBs for the draft with Fran Duffy from the Eagles on the College Draft Podcast. The Fantasy Feast, you guys need to listen to. We had the best guy in terms of mock draft accuracy last year. We had a guy that predicted getting Pat Mahomes for the Chiefs and Deshaun Watson for the Texans, which is pretty impressive. His name's Joe Marino. He was on the Fantasy Feast podcast. And then for those of you that want to make the draft a little more interesting, we dug in pretty deep with my guy Steve Fezzik on the Even Money podcast this week for draft prop bets. So there's a lot of good podcasts. Just go to rostucker.com to see them all and see which ones you want to take part in.
Excellent. Lots of great content. Everyone, make sure they check that out. Dive even a little bit deeper into the NFL draft. Ross Tucker has you covered. Once again, Ross, thanks for joining the NFL Talking Heads.
Absolutely, guys. My pleasure. Thanks for having me, always.
Thanks, Ross.
All right, Seth, that's another great spot there by Ross Tucker, taking time out of his day to talk to the NFL Talking Heads, talk to our audience, and break down some rookie draft. Fun stuff.
Yep, that doesn't get you fired up for the draft, then I don't know what will.
I wanted to ask him about a million questions. I mean, he started talking about football intelligence. He came up with that Sam Darnold story. You know, that is the insight that you're looking for, where people just has that information that you really just can't get on these message boards and these articles. I really want to ask him about the Wonderlic. You know, he brought up the football intelligence on being so important in the pre-draft process. We really ran out of time, but man, that would have been one question I would have loved to see the amount that he puts in terms of the importance of the Wonderlic, considering the range of quarterbacks between Lamar Jackson completely, you know, failing and every other quarterback. So I'd love to have had that. Either way, great spot by Ross Tucker.
Should we just have Ross Tucker on for the full hour next time?
Yeah, we'll see what that we'll see what his answer is to that.
Yeah.
All right, Seth. So we're gonna break down our NFL draft landing spots. Now we're gonna take a fantasy perspective here. We broke down some more, you know, on field stuff with Ross. But for the sake of this list, the top 10 NFL landing spots overall, any position, fantasy-wise position, let's start at number 10. Number 10 is the Detroit Lions tight end. We know Matt Patricia went to be the head coach of Detroit. They have a quick, fast-passing game, has never had really that tight end they can count on. Eric Ebron is gone. Number 10 is Detroit tight end.
I like it. I mean, there just aren't many good tight ends in the NFL, and it's so hard to predict which rookie tight ends are going to be good. It usually takes them longer to get acclimated to the NFL, to make an impact. Eric Ebron came into the NFL, 2014 with his rookie year, and it seemed like he had all the talent in the world. You know, they had high expectations for him. He could just never really turn the corner and turn into an above-average fantasy tight end. Not the best hands in the world, you know, had a lot of drops, but they have a good quarterback in Detroit. I think, you know, when you look at teams that have a good quarterback, that throw the ball a lot, and have a need for tight end, Detroit's definitely on the list.
All right, let's move along to number 9 here, Seth. No surprise, the release of Dez Bryant opens up a hole at wide receiver. They bring in some free agent help, but some really, you know, what you would imagine is not going to get the job done in Allen Hurns and Deontay Thompson. Dallas wide receiver comes in at number 9.
Yeah, I mean, I think if a receiver goes to Dallas, the job is there for the taking. I mean, they have Allen Hurns, who's been basically an average receiver his entire NFL career, had one good season, really. The only issue with Dallas is Dak Prescott. I mean, I think a lot of Dak Prescott owners, myself included, were really kind of scared off by the past few weeks of this, the last few weeks of the season last year. Is that an aberration, or is that going to be an emerging trend as we head into the season? I still like Dak Prescott, but I think my only question mark with a receiver going to Dallas would be, is Dak Prescott closer to the quarterback that we saw for the first half of the season, or is he closer to the quarterback that we saw once Zeke left with the suspension?
I mean, a tough answer, because it looks like a polarizing two different types of quarterbacks, but one of the things that you definitely do hear a lot, and you kind of see on the tape, is that he doesn't take a lot of those shots that Tony Romo had. So no matter which receiver goes in there, you know, if Dak is not going to start taking more shots, that's going to hurt the fantasy value of whichever receiver, talented or not talented, goes to Dallas. And you would have to figure that at some point they're going to address that in the draft. Next on the list, Seth, is Seattle tight end at number 8. We know they just lost Jimmy Graham. They don't have Paul Richardson anymore. No big free agent acquisitions. You know, they do have Doug Baldwin at wide receiver. It looks like their defense is taking a hit. Could be a little bit more of even more reliance on Russell Wilson this upcoming season. And it looks like they have a little bit of a hole at tight end.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham and his 10 touchdowns now on his way to Green Bay. Seattle, you know, like you said, really needs playmakers. They don't have the same running game they did when the days when they had Marshawn Lynch. Outside of Doug Baldwin, who's a smaller receiver, they really don't have many of those big targets that can go up and get the ball, especially when you get into the red zone, which is where Jimmy Graham was so effective last year. So Seattle gets a tight end. I could see that being a spot where a tight end could really have a big impact.
Okay, number 7, Seth, on the list is, I don't know if this is going to be a surprise to people or not, because they did sign one of their wide receivers to a pretty big contract in the offseason, and a big name, a fairly big name wide receiver in Alshon Jeffrey. But at number 7, we still have the Philadelphia wide receiver position, because they still haven't really, they still have a number 2 opening, right? And if we think that Carson Wentz is going to be the stud that he is, then as we've seen with many other stud quarterbacks, they can support 2 wide receivers.
Yep, I guess it comes down to how big a believer you are in Nelson Agholor. See, I like him, don't love him. So, you know, we see this with running backs all the time. You might like the current running back, but then the team drafts a running back that's better, the old running back's out of a job. I think if a receiver can come in for Philadelphia, I think that they can supplant Nelson Agholor as the number 2 option. So, and like you said, Carson Wentz is that good where, hey, you can have 2 or 3 receivers that are fantasy, you know, fantasy viable or viable from a fantasy standpoint. We've seen it in Green Bay. We've seen it in New England. The elite quarterbacks, you know, make it so there's enough to go around.
Absolutely. And now I think we start getting into the ones I'm going to be very, very interested in, these next 6 here. And again, maybe another little surprising one at number 6, Chicago running back position, kind of just playing off of the words that you just said, Seth. Sometimes you like a running back and then they draft another one. Baltimore Ravens have seeming to do it for like 4 straight years. Chicago did from Jeremy Langford to Jordan Howard. And they still drafted and went out and got Tariq Cohen, right? So the reason that I personally think that they're on this list and they're as high as they are at number 6 is because we've already kind of heard rumblings with Matt Nagy, and we know that he wants a pass catching back. Well, he has Tariq Cohen who could definitely do that, but with Tariq Cohen's frame, he's not an every down back. He's going to need someone who can at least be on there a little bit more on the first and second downs. Jordan Howard, a lot of drop passes. There were some rumors that he removed the Chicago Bears, you know, everything about their Chicago on his Twitter profile, social media, even I think maybe put up his house for sale in Chicago. So some rumors there. It'd be very interesting to see if Jordan Howard is a Chicago Bears through the entire next weekend of the NFL draft. He might be on the way out. And if that is the case, or if Chicago drafts a running back in the top 3 rounds, because we know that, you know, second round running backs are basically what they used to be in the first round. Top 3 rounds for a running back is still a heavy investment. That person might have a legitimate chance of supplanting Jordan Howard the same way that Jeremy Langford was taken over and lost his job.
Yeah. I mean, 2 things I look at. Number 1, new coach. You know, usually when a coach comes in, he didn't draft, or that regime didn't draft the running back, so there's a good chance he wants to find his guy. Number 2, we've seen kind of the running backs for a few years seem to not be as valuable, and then the pendulum started swinging back the other way, where now running backs, we see Alvin Kamara, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson. If you're not a running back that's a dynamic playmaker that can catch the ball like those guys, or you know you or you're a completely dominant runner like a Zeke or a Leonard Fournette, there's no guarantee you're gonna have a starting job for too long, because there's going to be guys out there that do have that. And I think that's what we see in Jordan Howard. He's a good downhill runner who's one-dimensional, only 23 catches last season. He had more catches in his rookie year with 29. So he's not someone that's going to catch the ball. And we've seen teams, you know, if they can find that playmaker that can do a little bit of what Alvin Kamara does, those type of running backs, that's what teams look for.
Absolutely. And keeping with the theme of running backs here, Seth, sliding in at number five is the New York Giants. No surprise here. We're going to probably get into some more of the obvious selections. You know, I think while the New York Giants are a very obvious pick, they definitely have a running back need. They have a pretty competent quarterback. They have definitely really good tight ends and wide receivers. They now have a new head coach. A head coach that seemed to use their running back quite well out in Minnesota. I'm not still sure that I'm going to get overly excited, but this still has to be clearly high on the list because there's just no one there to take the job.
Yep, I agree. We've been saying this for a while with the Giants. I think this is the year, if they draft a running back, that I think we can officially start to seriously get excited, because I think we've always been pretty skeptical with the Giants. And Paul Perkins last year did not help matters at all.
Did not help. He was that, you know, kind of mid-late running back that me and you like to target a few of those and not necessarily overreach for early running backs. And he did not pay off last year. Seth, number four on the list is the Indianapolis wide receiver position. Personally, I think they still need some additional help outside of T.Y. Hilton, especially when it comes to the red zone. They probably could use a running back too, but we have the Indianapolis wide receiver. Of course, we're hoping at some point in his life, Andrew Luck will be okay and on the football, throwing it.
Yep, no Dante Moncrief, and if Andrew Luck's back, I mean, similar to the Giants running back situation, I think we've always got excited about the prospects of a number two receiver opposite T.Y. Hilton in Indy.
Yeah. All right, so we get into our final three here, Seth. Anything to mention about the teams and the positions so far at the top, you know, 4 through 10? Anything of note?
No, I think obviously the running back ones are easier to project. I think those are the ones that are easier to get excited about, because if a running back that we like goes to Chicago, goes to New York, it's easier to kind of see how they're going to fit into the picture. Whereas receivers, it's in tight ends, it takes a lot longer for a lot of them, and there are more moving parts, more things to kind of factor in. So I think just in general, running backs are the easiest to look at and say, I think that's a good fit for fantasy year one.
Are you surprised that we don't have any quarterbacks so far on this list? We got one coming up next, but I mean, we just went through seven picks without a quarterback, considering how top heavy this draft is with quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that is a little surprising. I think a lot of that is just due to the fact that usually the teams picking at the top of the draft are very, very bad teams with bad offenses. This year is a little bit different. I mean, outside of Cleveland, it's really not, it doesn't look that bad. You have Denver picking at number five. You have Indy in there. But a lot of the teams that are good, obviously Indy has a quarterback. Denver to sign Case Keenum. So, you know, that's a little bit of a little bit tough. But just in general, yeah, like Cleveland, who's going to get excited about, you know, whether it's Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, anybody going to Cleveland?
Right, and without spoiling too much, Cleveland may or may not
you brought it up. You brought it up. So,
all right, number three is our first quarterback. It is not Cleveland. It is actually the Miami Dolphins. Seth and I were talking about this, you know, not to try and say that they are exactly like the San Francisco situation, but clearly we could see what the difference of happens when you just get a really competent quarterback. You go from, you know, struggling to do everything, and all of a sudden Jimmy Garoppolo can put up points, and we see what Kyle Shanahan's offense and system really can do. Adam Gase might not be Kyle Shanahan, but he, I think, is a fairly competent offensive-minded person. We saw what he did with Peyton Manning. They don't have the best weapons, but neither did Jimmy Garoppolo. But I think Miami is just such in need. I think they have enough there where I think the first thing they need right now is just a quarterback.
Yep. Coaching can cover up a lot of holes, and I'd much rather a rookie quarterback entering into a good system than, you know, playing in a really crappy system for a couple of years, and then the team hires a good coach to implement a new system. So Adam Gase to me is enough. And they have Devontae Parker, they have Kenyon Drake. They can add a couple of complementary pieces. Baker Mayfield is a player. He's a gamer. And you know, based on what he did in college, I think he's going to be one of the more exciting rookies, period, to watch this year. I think if he goes to Miami, probably the most important thing too is he's most likely going to be able to play right away. It's not a situation like Denver where he's, you know, he'd probably back up Case Keenum to start the season. He goes to Miami, there's a very good chance he's a starter.
Yep. So be very interested in what Miami does in the draft. I mean, you would have to imagine at some point they'll be drafting a quarterback. Number two, Seth, is probably my number one. You kind of had an overruling, I guess, on your number one. You're kind of fascinated with this team and position, which we'll get to. But number two is San Francisco and the wide receiver. I think this is, I don't care if San Francisco drafts a wide receiver in the seventh round. I am looking up every single one of them. I am researching every single one of them. It just makes too much sense. It makes too much sense what Kyle Shanahan has done with number one wide receivers, with Jimmy Garoppolo there. What he was able to do last year without any passing weapons. I'm going to be very intrigued what San Francisco does in the passing game.
Yeah, I agree. And if it's a dynasty league, this would probably be my number one. But if it's a redraft league, you know, just the fact that unless it's an elite wide receiving prospect, it's most likely going to take them, if not the whole first year, to get acclimated and produce. It's going to take them at least half the season to get their feet wet and make any meaningful impact, which is why the number one team is my team and landing spot if you're in redraft leagues, which is the Denver Broncos running back. And I, you know, especially, you know, and since, you know, we talked about the running backs in our last episode, and since then, just the other day, they released CJ Anderson, which just confirms what we were talking about, and just, you know, validates what we were talking about. So wide open spot there for the Broncos, and a good offense, much improved offense with a good defense. I think if a running back goes there, that is the spot to look at, which is why I have them at number one, and I overruled you, which, as I should. I should always be able to overrule you.
Well, considering I'm the one who knocked you out of multiple fantasy playoffs last year, I think I should have full say on any ties for the rest of the season. And that, I think that's how it should work. But, of course, you make up your own rules as you go along, and I have to just pretend like they actually exist. I'm just going to let you live in your own little Maryland. But I think, obviously, in a redraft league, that makes probably more sense. You know, you have a running back. They have a defense, as they do. They want to run the ball. They've got outside weapons.
So I just convinced you that easily. You just admitted that I just convinced you. I said in redraft leagues.
I said it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Did I admit anything?
So in a redraft league, would you rather have a rookie running back drafted, and this also depends on who the rookie running back, who the rookie receiver is.
Of course.
Would you rather, do you like, just in a vacuum, and just in general, do you like the Denver Broncos getting a rookie running back, or do you like the San Francisco 49ers getting a rookie receiver?
Well, let's say this. So we'll take Saquon Barkley and Calvin Ridley off the table. They're both probably the one at each of their positions. So let's say you can get whoever you think is number two, whoever Seattle, San Francisco thinks is number two, whoever that might be, whoever legitimately is the next best two.
I got a good one. I'll let you have
Calvin. No, you can't even let me answer.
Because you love talking. Calvin Ridley on the 49ers or Nick Chubb on the Broncos?
Ugh, Calvin Ridley, it's not even close.
Okay, I didn't expect that. I would still go with
Nick Chubb. I don't know. I'm not 100% sold on Nick Chubb. He seems like a reincarnated CJ Anderson.
Oh, Geis.
Geis, I like Geis a lot.
Geis or Ridley?
Geis over Ridley? I'll probably do that.
And he would.
Yeah, but you didn't start there, did you? You didn't start there.
Well, you're going to take Ridley off. I'm like, I know. My argument is, I have the better argument. I'll give you the number one rookie receiver. he can go to the 49ers because you can take the second or third running back. I mean, I went to, what, fourth or fifth with Nick Chubb. So bottom line is whoever goes to Denver as a rookie is most likely going to be the starting running back. It's hard to pass that up.
Either way, still hate you, but anyways, everyone check us out online. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, NFL Talking Heads. We've got some new articles, Seth, right, that recently got published from some of our writers. So we mentioned that last episode. I think maybe this will be the last time that we mention it. But if you're interested in writing, just make sure you hit us up on our website or send us an email, nation@nfltalkingheads.com. We got a couple good ones that just came out recently, right?
Yep. Couple good ones. You know, breaking down the Patriots situation, breaking down, I think there's one coming out on John Gruden in the Oakland Raiders, other one on Dez Bryant. So a lot of good topics. We're going to be pumping those out. So definitely go check those out and give us some feedback.
And there's two that came out, I think, on selling high and buying low on dynasty players, actually. So
yep,
definitely check those out from our writers, Jeffrey Hamilton and Jake Kneipfer, if I pronounced that correctly.
We probably did.
Obviously not. So anyhow, we are the NFL Talking Heads. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that three times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lowe. We'll catch you next time.